And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague from The Athletic, Stuart Mandel. We are taping Sunday morning. I just got back from Lincoln, Nebraska, where I saw a dud of a game where Oklahoma just absolutely blew out Nebraska after the Cornhuskers had like maybe 5 good minutes and then it fell apart. Stu, how would you rate what you saw on your TV yesterday?
You know, a lot happened. There was a lot of entertaining moments like Appalachian State's Hail Mary, but I don't know that there was like a overwhelming number one, you know, this is the most important story. We need to talk about it right now. I have a question for you. So we're 3 weeks in. What is it? Is there a team that coming into the season you never would have thought of as a playoff contender that you're now like, yeah, I could see that happening?
Ooh, that's a good question. This is too strong to say this, but like, cause I felt like Michigan was a top 10 team, but I feel a lot more bullish by the week, and they haven't played anybody good yet. I would definitely put them in there. I wouldn't go as far as to say Oklahoma is that team, but like maybe, I mean, they were impressive yesterday. Dylan Gabriel's a good fit for this. I just don't know how good their defense really is because Nebraska has almost no playmakers. So if you ask me for one, I think I would say Michigan, but it sounds like you have somebody else in mind.
Are you saying that coming into the season, it would never have occurred to you that Michigan could be a playoff team?
Well, here's where I was standing with it, Stu. Remember, my preseason pick to win the national title is Ohio State. It's hard for me to think that, like, if I'm picking Ohio State to win the national title, that there's going to be somebody else from the Big Ten that also would make the playoff because there's only four teams. Now, it's possible. We see, you know, we've had the SEC, you know, have two, but that was kind of my sticking point on it.
All right. I'll give you two since I'm the one who thought of this question. First of all, to me, one of the most surprising teams in the country so far is Washington, who I remember we spent a lot of time last year, maybe toward the end of the year, just perplexed at how things went so wrong under Jimmy Lake. And I mean, they were struggling to do anything on offense. We both thought John Donovan was a weird hire as OC. Man, watching Michael Penix just shred Michigan State. They scored touchdowns on 5 of their first 6 possessions. He could do no wrong. Like, if you went into the season with Washington, you'd be like, well, I think Kalen DeBoer is a good coach. And, you know, they probably have some talent there still. Maybe they go to a bowl game. Now I'm like, why couldn't they win the Pac-12? Why not them? Because this isn't a one game thing. 3 games in, he has 10 touchdowns, 1 interception. They have a lot of weapons that I wasn't necessarily expecting to see. And they were always good on defense. That wasn't really the problem. ZTF is back. He was kind of the breakout player for them in the COVID season, but they only played 4 games that year. So, you know, I think the Pac-12, everybody loves to write them off, but like you think about it, they beat the number 11 team, Michigan State. Oregon bounces back and beats the number 12 team, BYU. Washington State last week whips them. Washington State last week went on the road and beat a Wisconsin team that was ranked. You know, they've
Arizona,
had some.
By the way, Arizona beat the best program in FCS, which people go, North Dakota State. North Dakota State is good. North Dakota State would beat a lot of.
North Dakota State was favored in that game.
And I think they would beat a bunch of Power 5 teams. And so good for Arizona. They won that game. Obviously, they lost to Mississippi State, but they're much improved. Now, we don't want to talk about Arizona State because
they're a disaster.
That's a mess.
And of course, USC, you know, I mean, watching them against Fresno State, it was, I felt like every time he snapped the ball, somebody was going to break off a huge play. So you've got some teams there. You've got an interesting race. And so Washington is in the mix. And I know they haven't made it to the playoffs since 2016, that conference, but I could see it. The other one is less likely because of who's in their division, but at least they look like they're back to being in contention, and that's Penn State. You saw a lot of that Auburn game, I assume.
I did. I was in a sports bar in Omaha with all our Big Noon crew, and it was interesting to watch because you sit there and look and go, okay, I've talked to people at Penn State who love the young running backs they have. Right? Nicholas Singleton, it's like one of the comparisons is Adrian Peterson. The guys around him are really good. Now, the quarterback play, I'm not all the way in, but you know, one thing Auburn has is a lot of speed on defense, right? And it's down there, and we've seen this story before how Auburn is kind of, you know, bumfering around, and then they get it together and they knock somebody off. This wasn't even a close game, Stu. I mean, just, you know, I feel like we can talk about Brian Harsin maybe, you know, another day, maybe not too far in the future, because I don't know how long he's going
to
be there.
Yeah, I don't know how much longer he'll be the coach for us to talk about him, but okay.
I mean, they're really terrible on offense, but I just to see what they look like, I was really, really impressed. Now, I don't know, again, I don't know if I would go as far to say I think they're going to be a playoff team, but it's interesting because if you look, everybody in that division in the Big Ten, you seen the records? Rutgers is 3-0, you know, like they're all, like almost everybody's undefeated. Maryland's 3-0. Ohio State's 3-0, you know, Michigan State's obviously not, but you know, you go through the list. I don't remember seeing anything like that, like late into September.
The Big Ten West, not so much. that's a different story over there. I agree with you. I think Penn State, a couple mediocre seasons, and
just to button that up, by the way,
yeah,
there are obviously seven teams in the Big Ten East. Six are 3-0. The only one is not is Michigan State, who, as you mentioned, lost in Seattle yesterday.
Indiana's 3-0.
Indiana is 3-0. They scuffled to beat Western Kentucky yesterday. It was a last
good for them. Good. I'm glad to see that Michael Penix is doing well, and Michael Penix's former team is doing well. The thing with Penn State is, you know, coming to the year, I was not so optimistic because I just felt like Sean Clifford is going to be Sean Clifford, and we're not going to see much more than that. But he has now gone on the road twice against Power Five teams this year, led them to the comeback win at Purdue. And then what I would say about him yesterday was, it's not like he was tearing it up, but you remember like the mistakes and the turnovers the last couple of years. It seems like he's more comfortable. He's not pressing. And I think part of that is he's got more help. He's got Nick Singleton. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other part of that, Stu, is, you know, talking to people there and pointing out the second year in the system.
Yeah. Right?
You know, so I think that helps, you know, towards your point, five touchdowns, one pick. If he doesn't turn the ball over, you know, they're playing well on defense. I mean, you know how many, you know what Nick Singleton's yards per carry is?
Oh, I know he had 250-yard carries yesterday.
It is 11.1.
And it's pretty amazing for a true – I mean, five-star or not. Like, I can remember Leonard Fournette coming in. I can remember Adrian Peterson coming in. And they didn't dominate right from week one. Even the most touted running backs take a little time to get used to the college level. That has not been the case with him. And this is what they needed. I mean, they went through that period where – they lost Ernie Brown and obviously Noah Kane has transferred out. I mean, they had that bowl game against Memphis where they ran for like 300 something yards. And then one by one, they lost all of those guys. So he has replenished that room. It shows you the power of one really good recruiting class that he just had come in. So, yeah, I think I'm inclined to think that Ohio State and Michigan are still like a half step to a full step ahead of them. But I mean, they're going to be more of a factor than they have been the last couple of years for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. Just to circle back on your Washington point, you know, we both have liked the Kalen DeBoer hire a lot. I don't think a lot of people know much about him. Like, I'll be honest, when he was winning NAIA national titles, I didn't know anything about Sioux Falls or him. I didn't really hear about him until he was the OC at Indiana. And you talk to people in the Big Ten, go, that guy does a really good job over there. It's like that guy, they didn't know how to pronounce his name. They didn't know who he was. And then obviously went back to Fresno and it did a really nice job there. And it is impressive, right? You know, like, again, I don't want to go too far over and say, hey, they're going to be a, I don't know if anybody's going to be a real legit threat to make the playoff on that side of, on this side of the country. But he, you know, Michigan State was really bad defense last year. I think they were able to exploit a bunch of other stuff with it too. The thing that's interesting, and just from, you know, I've heard a lot about some of the personnel in this team because of Chris Peterson and being around him, especially like, all right, they were young receivers. I think some of these young receivers have really blossomed in a hurry.
I also think we just, because Michael Penix has been hurt so much, including all of last season, we kind of forgot that, oh yeah, when he does play, he's really good. I mean, he was the main reason why Indiana had that, you know, really good season in 2020. So, I mean, I don't know. We haven't really started doing Heisman lists yet, but if we did, I would definitely have him high on the list. Let me look this up real quick right now. He's number two in the country in passing yards per game. And he is number 12 in passer rating, one spot behind Stetson Bennett. So good for them. Doesn't it make you wonder, by the way, when you see a coach come in and just transform an offense like that? Obviously Lincoln Riley has done it, but you know, given the star power he accumulated, that's not surprising. Then you look at a team like Texas A&M, like the coach has been there for 5 years. He's had plenty of time to recruit the guys he wants, and they're terrible on offense. I mean, doesn't that speak a little bit to how, you know, that you've got to have the right OC and the right scheme. And if you still can't move the ball and you've been there for a while, you know, and we don't have enough players is not the excuse anymore. It might be time to scrap your playbook, right?
Yeah, and I don't know. And I know he got asked, he being Jimbo got asked that specifically. I think Brent Zornemann is a local beat writer there. Had asked him, and Jimbo kind of, you know, said the right things. He was like, yeah, I'm not going to let my ego stand in the way, or something to the effect that I'm not going to let my ego stand in the way. What's the best thing for this team? You know, we evaluate it all the time. I mean, they beat Miami. I don't, you know, a win is a win if you're where they were at that point. I mean, they did not do anything on offense to win that game. You know, it was like Max Johnson played better than what they've been, you know, getting from quarterback play. And I think that's not entirely shocking. He's experienced and he's a tough kid and he's a smart kid. And I think all those things kind of factored in. I think they're going to have to play a lot better if they're going to hope to be more, if they're going to get anywhere near the top 25. You know, it's just, I feel like I've said on here a bunch of times, like Miami does not have a lot of firepower, and they were without, you know, probably their the best of a mediocre lot of receivers yesterday, you know, and you saw it, right? Like they ran the ball pretty well against A&M, but they couldn't throw. And it's because the receivers are really, really average. And that's the biggest thing I think Mario Cristobal needs to fix roster-wise.
They also committed about just about every self-inflicted wound you could possibly think of. And they also just caught a bad break. Like Texas A&M muffs that return at the end. If they recover that, I mean, right, they're sitting
the
3
yard line. Yeah.
Didn't quite go their way, but yeah, the field goal problems, his clock management was questionable.
Problems, yeah. They had special teams problems because they fumbled another punt, you know, or fumbled earlier in the game that, you know, after they get off the field, I think it was two different situations where they got off the field and then A&M got the ball either, you know, they had a stopped them. And then all of a sudden there was a penalty, a 15 yard penalty on Miami. So that gives them the first down. It's just like, you can't do that stuff when you're just not that talented. And right now they're not.
Right. That talented. I don't know if you saw this, but our guru, Matt Brown, had a pretty amazing stat yesterday or last night, which is that Miami is the first team since at least 2000 to gain 27 first downs and not score a touchdown.
That is bad, especially if you have a guy that people are saying, you know, they think could be a first round quarterback. It's been a shaky start for Tyler Van Dyke. Now, look, they don't have a lot of receivers, and it's coming. You know, Rambo was a really good player for them last year.
Yeah,
and they miss it because they don't have much.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
So I got a front row seat, Stu, for Oklahoma, Nebraska. And I do want to circle back with you. You were skeptical on Oklahoma. I think you had them 7-5. Are you having second thoughts after seeing them a little bit this year?
Oh, yeah. I already put out my statement on Twitter. I'm taking no questions, but I went ahead and told everybody I was wrong. I think Nebraska is terrible. So, you know, I don't want to overreact too much, but clearly, I mean, the concerns I had weren't even necessarily about the specific personnel. It's just such a huge, huge change for Brent Venables to come in. Really the first full coaching change they've had since Bob Stoops got the job way back when, because obviously he promoted Lincoln Riley. I underestimated a couple things. One, I mean, Dylan Gabriel was really good at UCF. I think because of the guy they lost, Caleb Williams, who's a little bit more hyped, you know, I maybe took for granted the impact Gabriel would have. He was really good against Nebraska. But more than that, you know, Oklahoma has struggled on defense for years and years and years. And I know Brent Venables is a great defensive coach, but you would think he would need at least a little time to build up the roster. But no, that looked like they gave up a touchdown on the first drive, and they didn't give up another one until the last drive. That looked like a Brent Venables defense that you've come to expect at Clemson. Were there certain guys on that defense that you were like, oh, okay, yeah, didn't see that coming?
Well, I mean, Danny Stutzman emerged before. I mean, he's a young linebacker who makes a lot of, you know, edge guy makes a lot of plays. Ethan Downs makes a lot of plays. Reggie Grimes. Like, I think what you're seeing is guys that are able to make a lot of negative plays. And I think that really helps, you know. I don't look at it and say, because there were definitely early on, you know, Nebraska moved up and down the field and there was guys who were open and it was just like, oh, this is way different. And then you had the run where Gabriel just, it just shows how bad a tackling team Nebraska is. Like we knew they did not have much, you know, much firepower, but man, they were just lost on defense. But I think, like you said, I don't want to go too far on how much better this defense is. They definitely look like they were playing fast though, right? And so I'm interested to see what happens as they get in and face a lot better offenses.
Nebraska wasn't terrible on offense the first few games. It was other problems. And Casey Thompson finished 14 of 20 for 129 yards and got sacked 4 times. It's encouraging, if nothing else. Also, by the way, I was wrong on them. And then my preseason Big 12 title pick, Kansas State, went and lost to Tulane. So probably these standings are going to look a lot different than how I predicted them. There's a lot of contenders.
Jumping off the K-State bandwagon?
No, I'm not actually. I think that was more interesting thing about Tulane is I feel like Willie Fritz has had them right on the cusp for years. In fact, they put a big scare into Oklahoma last year. Right. And then they went 2-10. And I wasn't paying close enough attention to tell you what went wrong there. But Michael Pratt is considered a sleeper NFL draft prospect at quarterback. No, I'm not giving up on K-State.
Okay, so now no knock on Spencer Sanders or Dylan Gabriel. The best quarterback in that conference might be Jalen Daniels.
Yes, let's talk about the mighty Jayhawks.
Yeah, like so right. They go in, they whip a good Houston team. right? Beat them by 18 points. This is the first time they've been 3-0 in 13 years. First time they've had back-to-back road wins in like 15 years. You and I are both big fans of Lance Leipold and have been since before he got to, really since he was getting going in the MAC. But like, I think to see what they have been doing, and then you say, okay, their quarterback is legit. Like, he's as good as any quarterback in this league. Is it too far? Does it sound crazy to think they can contend for the Big 12 title?
Yeah, I won't go that far. You're going further than I am. I'm just saying, what I see is, okay, keep in mind, Kansas, you just said first time 3-0 since 2009. That is also the last time they finished better than 3-9 in a season. Like, sometimes you forget just how bad it's been. I think they're going to go to a bowl game, and that might sound modest, but when you've been 3-9, you know, anywhere between 1-11 and 3-9 for 13 straight years, that's a big deal. Jalen Daniels is legit. You're right. And it's not like he came in with, I looked back, he flipped from Middle Tennessee State to Kansas on signing day in 2019. But he's good. I mean, watching them against Houston, they have players, they have speed. And they look like a Big 12 football team, which they haven't for a long time. The crazy thing about Lance Leipold is remember, Les Miles got fired in the spring. So, you know, it's always a challenge for a first year coach. They always feel like they don't even have enough time, right? Even if they get hired in November. He got hired on April 30th. Obviously, they struggled for much of last year, but then they beat Texas. A little bit of encouraging.
They beat Texas, and they almost beat West Virginia and somebody else. Maybe K-State. Maybe it was like they had two, like after that, I think they had back-to-back field goal losses. They really could have had a real good chance of winning three in a row to finish the season out.
Want to hear a crazy stat?
Let's have it.
So the number one scoring team in the country right now, not surprising given they've played three absolute nobodies, is Michigan. Number two team, James Madison, has only played two games. And they're sitting at number three, averaging 53 points a game, is Kansas.
Yeah, and by the way, they've played two pretty good teams on the road, right? Now, their first – I forgot who they played. They didn't play. They played West Virginia last week on the road. Yeah. I'm saying I forgot who they played the first week. It was an FCS team, but Houston's good. By the way, Houston, Doug Belk was the hottest defensive coordinator in college football last year.
They're not. Yeah, they're clearly not as good as we thought they were going to be. Like they were.
No, I'm just saying they're not doing this against terrible, terrible teams.
No, they're not. They're not. That was a big win. So I think they're going to go to a bowl game. I don't know. I don't think they're going to. Well, I could be wrong, but yeah, it's I'm a little bummed that I get it. Game day is going to Tennessee, Florida. Part of me last night was holding out hope because it's 3-0 Kansas against 3-0 Duke in Lawrence this week. Games on FS1.
Maybe that's the rub still.
Yeah, it's probably the rub credit. Although the Tennessee, Florida games on CBS. Credit to Duke for also being 3-0, but I think that Kansas is a better 3-0. So if they win that game, they will already have won the most games in a season since 2009. So rock chalk.
Hey, by the way, before we get out of the Big 12, one thing, pleasantly surprised if you're a Texas fan, I thought they would really struggle with, yesterday with UTSA.
Yeah, me too.
They won by three touchdowns. And now, look, going to Lubbock won't be easy, but I thought they might. I thought that game would be really close. I thought they might get knocked off. They didn't. Obviously, Bijan went wild, and he's fantastic. You know, everything I've heard, and we reported this, we expect Quinn Ewers to be back, sooner than a lot of other people, I guess, did. And if he's back for Oklahoma, which it sounds like there's a decent chance he will be, and you get a Texas team that could be 5-0, right? They have to get through Lubbock, which won't be easy, but I guess it would be four. Yeah, no, they have to get to Lubbock and West Virginia, which West Virginia is not looking very good. But Texas, again, we talked about them last week, and you wrote a nice story about them and the momentum they have. I really thought there was a chance they could stub their toe, yeah, because the old Texas, that's what they find a way to do.
Well, yeah, I went as far as to pick UTSA. That's the thing. That's what yesterday showed me, is they're not, we're so used to years and years of Texas shooting itself in the foot, choking down the stretch, whatever you want to say. And, you know, that there was, it was tied at halftime and then they just ran away with it. And it was good to see Bijan have a big game like that. It does seem like the, you know, after the Alabama game, all these players coming into the interview room saying, see, there's a different culture now. We're not going to back down. You're like, okay, sure. That's what you expect guys to say. But I think that that's the case. I think it's not, we'll see. I don't want to go too far ahead of myself, but I don't think you're going to see a Tom Herman, or even last year, Sark's team obviously started well and then cratered down the stretch. Florida, Tennessee, big game this week, but I got to say, you know, every year there's what we always jokingly refer to as a September Heisman winner. This year, I believe we had a week one Heisman winner, and that was Anthony Richardson, who since that first game where Greg McElroy compared him to Vince Young, and we had a whole discussion about that on here, it's not been quite the same. And he was very fortunate. They were very fortunate to beat USF last night. Anthony Richardson threw two picks. The second one was, they got lucky in a lot of respects. So he throws this pick six in the end zone and South Florida appears to run it out 50 yards, but then it turns out the guy's foot was on the line as a touchback. USF had a chance to put the game in overtime. They're just kind of setting up for the field goal. And then their snapper snaps it 15 yards over the quarterback's head to move it back to a long field goal. And then on the field goal, the holder botched it. So there goes that. Florida beats USF, which that would have been a huge upset. USF has been bad for several years. Doesn't give me a lot of faith in the Gators heading to Knoxville. Tennessee's been scoring at will this season. You know, that's the thing about those week one games, right? They often turn out to be misleading. I don't think Florida's as good as we thought that night. And I don't think Utah's rebounded quite well from that game. And remember, that game came down to an interception in the end zone. So if he doesn't do that, maybe we're speaking completely. Maybe Florida's 1-2, and we're speaking a lot differently about both those teams right now.
Yeah, I mean, I remember talking to, for our big noon show, I talked to an NFL scout like the day I flew in there. So it was that Thursday. And I'm like, well, the question is, can he be consistently accurate? That's what we need to see. Right now, that is a big question mark. He's still very young, but 0 touchdowns, 4 interceptions this year. That
not good.
Not good. I would ask this. So when you looked at everything in total yesterday, I know it's like, okay, it was South Carolina. It was a big point spread. I'm not sure anybody has been more impressive than Georgia. Like, I feel like we just need to say Stetson. I think we both think Stetson Bennett's really good and has been underrated for a bit. He's just really good, really, really good. And he's fitting the offense. And I just feel like, because to me, they have been the most impressive team in the country. And it's again,
I don't think there's a close second.
No, I don't think there is either. I think when you look at it, the way their schedule sets up, and after we just talked about, you know, Anthony Richardson and how they, you know, how he is a big work in progress and struggled in the passing game. You look at their schedule, man, it's like, unless Will Levis plays out of his mind and you know, Kentucky's pretty good and maybe we'll have Rodriguez back by that point. But like, I don't see anybody touching them or getting close the way they're just absolutely bludgeoning people in the regular season.
Their offense. So last year, the story of Georgia was obviously the defense, and it's still good, but their offense is so fun to watch now. I think, you know, Todd Monken's been there.
And it's still good. They've given up 10 points in 3 games.
Yeah, exactly.
Oregon did nothing. South Carolina did nothing.
But their offense is unstoppable. And I'm gonna say something that might sound crazy, but I want to see if you think it's not so crazy. Is it possible that the best player in the country this year at any position is Brock Bowers?
I mean, it's possible. I don't know if I would agree with it, but like,
can I make my case?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, obviously it's hard for it. It sounds crazy to say that about a tight end, but this guy is more than a tight end. He had 3 touchdowns against South Carolina, and there were 3 different ways. They used him as basically a running back on an end around on a reverse, and he scored. they threw a back corner end zone fade to him where you would expect like a 6'5" receiver to do this, right? Where it's a jump ball. You got to jump up and get it. And then you got to keep 1 foot in bounds. And then there was just like a basic pass over the middle. He broke for 78 yards. Like, what tight end breaks a 78 yard touchdown?
Yeah. So, you know, the one thing it reminds me a little of, and this is not the best comparison, but it reminded me a little bit of Keith Jackson when Keith Jackson was at Oklahoma. Obviously, it wasn't like Mike Leach air raid. They weren't throwing all over the place, but he would hit tons of big plays and they did a lot of funky stuff with him to exploit his athleticism. And again, they're different players, but it's like they are doing some really creative stuff to take advantage of him. And he's their best skill guy of a good group. It's impressive. And again, getting back to the defense, like I'm watching that thinking, man, you know, Spencer Rattler did, you know, like, I don't know.
Maybe not the savior they were hoping for.
No, he's really struggling. He's looking like the Spencer Rattler from what we saw last year.
Yes, he is. But again, I mean, the fact that Oregon, right? Remember we came out after that game. We came on here and you're like, yeah, Georgia was impressive, but man, I'm really worried about Oregon. And then they went out and Bo Nix played great and they ran away from a good BYU team. Like, you're starting to realize, like, oh, that's just what Georgia is going to do to people this year.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
All right, real quick, I meant to ask you when we were talking about the Nebraska-Oklahoma game you're at. We focused on OU and understandably so, but seeing it up close, how did Nebraska get this bad?
I think it's really in the details. You get a clearer picture from talking to coaches there of how wildly disorganized the Scott Frost tenure was, right? I mean, for Mickey Joseph to be giving the staff schedules that they've really never had before. And even like if you look at it, one of the first lines it says is in 6:30 in office. Like you have to say in office. And it was like, well, there were people who were showing up at like 6:50, 6:59 for a 7 o'clock meeting kind of thing. And, you know, them not doing live tackling hardly ever. Like he did that at practice Tuesday and Wednesday. That was probably the first time that Nebraska had live tackling at practice in a long, long time. And
Why wouldn't you ever do live? What's the reasoning there?
You know, one of the things that Mickey Joseph made the point, he was like, yeah, they're tackling the donut when it's rolling. He's like, the donut can't give you a stiff arm. The donut, yeah. You know, it doesn't have big thighs that are going to knock you back. And I think you're not fixing that in a week by doing live tackling. They were so bad they can do all that stuff for weeks and it may not get sorted out. So I think there's that piece of it. So it's the disorganization. I think the other thing, and I mentioned this on our Big Noon show, is you now hear a lot of stories of how impulsive Scott Frost was. He would jump in at critical moments in games and call for plays that they hadn't even repped much. And I think that was an issue. And then the biggest, you know, one of the biggest things also is just listening to the wrong people, listening to people who were giving him advice. And he was getting a lot of bad advice from a couple of buddies from his time, you know, from his old Nebraska buddies. And it just was such a mess. And I think the biggest, you know, like, it comes back to that disorganization. Like, you had a team, you know, if you think about it this way, when Scott Frost got the UCF job, because you could say, how could this guy have been so good at UCF and so bad at Nebraska, his alma mater? And I think one of the probably ways to look at it is, when he was at UCF, he took over from George O'Leary. George O'Leary was like the taskmaster, you know, kind of, you know, if you honestly, kind of an asshole, and how he ran things. And there was probably when Frost staff came in, it was loose, more players coach, players responded because they kind of had the reins pulled off them. Here, you know, they took over a situation that was already loose and sloppy. And it was like they weren't going to be able to do it the other way. And I think it became more loose and sloppy. And that's what you've seen. And their margin for error is not very good. The roster is not good. They have not recruited well at all. And so these are big issues, right? And I don't know. I'm not saying that whoever takes over, you know, next year is going to have like the rebuild that, you know, you had at Kansas. But there are big issues there, real big issues.
Yep, they're going to need their own. We talked about last week. They're going to need their own Lance Leipold or
maybe
Matt Campbell.
Maybe will be.
Let's not steal away Kansas's coach just yet. Yeah, they need somebody who's going to be real detail oriented. You know, has a very solid, reliable plan that they've instilled before. And Scott Frost, it's going to go down as one of the truly strangest hires.
I mean, to give you an example, they go to Ireland for that game against Northwestern, and it's like there's a staff meeting and the head coach doesn't make it.
What?
You know? Yeah. So
did the head coach have too much Guinness the night before? What happened there?
I don't know why he didn't make it, but that's not setting a good tone going into your first game of the first game of the season, especially when everybody knows you're on the hot seat.
If I had to give you a guess, who will be the next Power Five head coach to go? And I'm going to give you a few choices. Harsin, we mentioned him earlier. Mm-hmm. And then Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech, they got steamrolled by Ole Miss. Not that that's entirely surprising, but they get worse and worse by the year.
Yeah, I suspect it actually might be Jeff Collins. Like, there's a lot of heat on him. There's also a lot of heat on his AD, Todd Stansberry. I would not be surprised at all if both were gone in the not too distant future. I'd be very shocked if Brian Harsin made it through this year also. But I just think, you know, they may pull the plug on Jeff Collins sooner than they pull it on Harsin. He's been there a little while longer. Look, the teams they've played so far are not like, I don't know. I mean, you look at it as like they got the Clemson game felt like it was closer than 41-10. I was just like, looked at the box, you know, like they were hanging around for a while. They didn't look great doing it. They were hanging around. You know, I don't know what, you know, because they in the case of Tech, they don't have a bye week for another like 3 weeks. Usually coaching changes happen before bye weeks, but obviously that didn't happen in Nebraska. I think there was different issues in Nebraska than there are certainly at Georgia Tech. But my guess is that one might be the next one to go on the at least on the Power Five level.
All right, real quick, let's finish with some shout outs. Okay, you may have seen this, but a really sad story at Clemson this week. Brian Brise, their star defensive end, lost his younger sister to cancer. Shout out to Louisiana Tech, who came to town and handed Dabo Swinney a box. Every single player on Louisiana Tech's team wrote a letter to him. Dabo said, "I'm a Sonny Cumbie fan for life," after they did that. What a classy move by Louisiana Tech. And then on a lighter note, Shout out to any Iowa fans who stayed till the bitter end of their game against Nevada that was delayed three different times for a total of 4 hours. The game kicked off at 6:30 Central and ended at 1:39 a.m. If you stayed all the way to the end of it, hats off to you, Iowa fans.
Stu, very well done. I love the Sonny Cumbie and La Tech shout out. I would give a shout out actually to a coach you and I both know pretty well from his time at Stanford, Mike Blumgren. He has had a rough rebuild at Rice. He got a really nice win yesterday over a Louisiana program that had given people all sorts of problems. And I think, you know, look, Blumgren's been really missed at Stanford quite a bit. You know, he was such a good offensive line coach and so good in the run game. And that was kind of their, that became their really, their identity at Stanford. And like we said, he's been missed. I thought this was a really good win for the Rice Owls. I think Louisiana had some kind of, what was the streak?
Louisiana went in with the longest winning streak in the country. They, last year, they lost their opener to Texas and then won the rest of their games to finish 13-1. So they were on a 15-game winning streak. And yes, I agree with you. I would not have expected Rice to be the team that ended
it. And do it handily, 33-21. Yeah. So good shout out to the Rice Owls.
That brings Mike Blumgren's record at Rice to 13-32. So he's still got some climbing out to do. But that certainly is the kind of win that should build you some momentum. They're also going, people, you know, this seemed crazy at the time to me and still is, but they're going to the AAC next year. So, so be a good time for them to have kind of a breakthrough season. So great shout out. So
randomly, by the way, this is like a behind the, I don't know if this is for the podcast or not, but like I'm sitting in our green room before our show and the boss walks in. And it was one of the first times, because I've like, you know, obviously we're around former legendary players, but I don't think I'd ever been around him. And just like when I was growing up, he was a huge deal in my era, just of, you know, when Oklahoma was rolling and everything, and just kind of like him walking in. It was funny, like Rob Stone was like, hey, he's walking with a Lululemon bag. My times have changed kind of thing. But it was interesting because like just to hear his, you know, him talk about a lot of different things from Oklahoma. He had like 30 surgeries because of his, you know, from his playing career and everything like that. But, you know, it's just, I don't know where I'm going with that, but it was like at one point I'm just like, wow, this is the boss, you know, kind of thing, where I'm not sure how many college football players from that era would kind of connect with me like that, where I was just like, oh, there's a little bit of aura here. Whereas, you know, I mean, certainly, we've been around probably guys who are quote bigger stars, but for whatever reason, that one was like kind of gave me pause for a second.
Where will you and the crew be heading this week?
We have a 3-0 versus 3-0. It is Maryland going to Michigan. I bet it will be an interesting trip for Urban Meyer. But it is going to be fun to see the Wolverines. This is a good test. There's, you know, look, Maryland's been very good on offense. They got a lot of firepower. I'm excited to get to Ann Arbor. I think it'll be a fun trip.
I saw the end of the Maryland SMU game. They survived SMU. I'm glad Michigan is finally playing a real football team so we can get a better sense of who they are. And then of course, you know, chance for Maryland to show that they're for real. So have fun with that one. We will be back on Wednesday. Send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com because we always go mailbag there, and we'll see you next time.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.